2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome on in. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us on a beautiful Monday. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Here we are in studio after our wild weekend of travels.
Oh, it was wild.
Scott Mitchell, former NFL quarterback, former quarterback at the University of Utah, coming in from Corvallis as he watched and did the analysis on the game with Bill Riley of the Utes crushing Oregon State this weekend handily and making a move really and making a statement but this is and that's a huge story. It's a huge story and when we sat down today and we're trying to talk about what the biggest stories of the weekend were, Scott shut me right up because he was like, that's not even close to the biggest story
they
of the
really
weekend.
And Utah was as good as they've been. They really were. They were as good as they've been. But I'm telling you, the biggest story this weekend is BYU and this loss. It is an absolute mess.
So that's where we start. Our 705 cut starts right here, talking about BYU, their loss over the weekend to lowly South Florida. It is the cut at 705.
The cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
By the way, as we're watching this too, Jamal Williams getting his first carries after being back from the injury that he had a few weeks ago that left him strapped down to a board. Jamal Williams, former BYU running back, back in the game and back taking carries next to Aaron Rodgers in the backfield for the Green Bay Packers. That, awesome to
really
see him back.
See. Yeah.
But listen, I give Scott every opportunity. I go, and he gets mad when I don't bring up Utah first sometimes in the program. And then here's Scott telling me we got to talk about BYU first in the program. This was as bad of a loss as I've seen in the recent – now, barring the 2017 season where a loss to East Carolina at East Carolina, the loss to UMass at home when BYU is 1-7 at that point of the year, those feel really bad. But I will tell you –
UMass was bad.
I will tell you, the feelings inside of this BYU team and inside of BYU Nation, all these Cougar fans that are out there listening, their feelings – feel very much like 2017.
What makes it so hard, though, is that they felt like they had got it kind of fixed. Like they turned a corner, that there was a maturity. BYU felt like it had more depth. They felt like they found their quarterback. They felt like this would never happen again kind of thing. There's no way that this team could go back to 2017. And I remember having the conversation last week where we go, this game right here, playing South Florida, that's not very good, actually is going to be probably the determining game of whether BYU gets bowl eligible, which the statement was kind of meant as, well, that's ludicrous.
Right.
Like, that's crazy that, like, this game that's probably one of the easiest on their schedule, supposedly, is actually the one that's going to determine more than likely if they get bowl eligible because there's nothing else to look forward to.
And you know, it's a great point because it's like, I guess the lack of motivation, it would make a difference. I mean, these players.
And you wonder if it plays into it.
27-0, BYU has lost the fourth quarter in the last 2 weeks to their opponents. And their opponents, if you'll recall, are Toledo and South Florida.
Right.
BYU fans all right now are thinking to themselves, Scott, that the next two games aren't just going to be worse, but are going to be losses. That are going to be Boise State, a ranked, undefeated Boise State team coming into Provo. That feels a lot worse than a South Florida team that really was kind of going halfway. It felt like some of this game. This is an unorganized team, a bad football team, and BYU ended up losing to them and having this garbage fourth quarter that they had had against Toledo. And somebody said to me, after Toledo's win last week, it was, after losses like this, I don't want to know about whether or not Kalani should be fired or this coaching staff needs to be fired. What I want to know is, how are we going to avoid this type of a loss in the future? And then they had it again. And then I see fans defending. They go, I want to see. Now, listen, be a good BYU fan and make sure that you show your support for the team. This team was injured. I get it. The injuries were there. Jaren Hall goes out with a concussion. Maybe they win the game without him, or with him or without him. Maybe not. Baylor Romney comes in exceptionally poised for a guy who you didn't think was even going to play.
Really,
and all these things are just make up part of one of the weirdest games that I've ever witnessed. I'm there in Tampa, sweating my tush off in the last part of the fourth quarter, coming down into the from the booth, because you can go on the sidelines the last 5 minutes as media. I'm watching this game from the sidelines and I'm going, what on earth is going on? It seemed like chaos. It seemed really out of sync. Injuries were piling up there at the end of the game, and all of the energy was on the side of South Florida, and BYU did not have it.
What's hard is that this was a for sure game, but what it really tells you is where the program is. And it's I don't think it's Kalani Sitake, and I don't think it's one issue. I don't think it's a coaching staff issue. I don't think it's a player issue. It's really all of it together. This is a team that has a really tough schedule. I mean, this part of their schedule wasn't any easier than the first four games. The teams they're playing are good. Here's the problem. Until BYU really decides that they're going to get serious about a football program, you're going to continue to see this. I don't care who the coach is. I don't care who's in the administrative part of this. But by serious, Stanford, Notre Dame, when they're good, and these are high academic schools,
right,
they're religious schools. I mean, it's hard to have good football programs.
They do it, though.
But they do it because they from the very top of the whole mountain decide we're going to have a good football program.
Jamal Williams just gets in the end zone for a touchdown for the Green Bay Packers, and that's their first score of the night. So they're trailing right now 13-7 here, Monday Night Football in there. I wanted to sneak that in because he just got in the end zone, and I know that a lot of folks were hoping that he was going to be back this season after that injury that he got, and he just stepped in the end zone for a nice little touchdown there. Kalani Sitake, the blame after the game. By the way, let me just paint an awkward picture for you after the game. We're in the press conference room after the game. It's five reporters, 100 seats. We're on the front row, okay? Five reporters on the front row. Kalani Sitake walking in, and he makes that walk up to the podium. He stands up there, and he goes, and he made maybe a sentence. He just said, got to win this game. Tough. It's the worst. His face was as fallen as I've ever seen it. And then here we are, the five reporters on the front row, asking our dumb questions. And when I say dumb questions, I mean he did not want to answer them, right? I mean, I'm sure he thought they were not ones that he wanted to hear. But the blame game started right after the game. And today in his press conference addressing the media now that they're back in Provo, here's what Kalani said about blame itself, specifically about not blaming the players for this loss.
I'm not going to blame our players, though. To be honest with you, you normally as a coach, if they give you the effort and they're tough, then we should put them in a position to at least handle the run consistently. And that's what we're going to try to get done.
Okay, so don't blame the players. So then where does the blame lie?
I'm hands-on with everything. So anything that's not functioning well is my fault. And so that's how I look at it. It's hands-on with the offense, defense, and special teams. And we're not performing well, so that's on me.
This is where people start to say, then what is going to change? And how long until it changes? And this is why people start to talk about Kalani's job. This is where people, whether it's responsible or not, or whether it's mean or not, or whatever it is, This is the type of stuff, because all the coaches will say, and after the game, he goes, it's on me, it's on me, it's on me, it's on me. I didn't have my guys ready, whatever. And all of these things, Scott, feel like the 2017 season, which was the worst.
But it is on him. I mean, because he's the head coach. I mean, it really is. And but I think you need to look at it across the board and really look at how the coaching is handled and who the coaches are. I'm not going to say that they aren't that it isn't that way, but it's how you can hire a coach at BYU, even a head coach. And I also think it's about how you do recruiting. And I think they really need to look at the whole recruiting thing, and I think they need to look at independence and have almost not a rose colored from a BYU internal.
Blue, please. It's light blue.
Sorry,
it's baby blue.
It's a figure of speech that's not. It's gender or color neutral.
I get it. It's good.
You probably need some rose colored glasses instead of some blue colored glasses. That's my whole point. Is an objective outside opinion to give you a better perspective of really where you are as a program.
We've got a lot to talk about, a lot to unpack here on the program, and we're going to have Dave McCann come in here in just a little bit to also break some of these things down. It's a weird thing we're trying to deal with here.
I just want to talk about Utah because it's really good.
I know.
It's like way good.
Hey, you know what?
This is like depressing. I don't want to talk
in the
about
back.
This BYU stuff
Sit
anymore.
Down in the back. We're going to get to you, okay? Be patient. Oh, so excited. All right. All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Lots to unpack over the weekend. We're Scott Mitchell, former NFL quarterback, also current analyst on the radio for the University of Utah up in Corvallis. I was down in Tampa taking in the sights of two very different football programs, two very different football games, and a lot that we were just talking about BYU and where the main feeling kind of flowed after a loss like that. A lot of emotions, of course, that – as soon as a loss happens, there are just the loss emotions that are just the regular ones you always get. But we're going to try to unpack some of these with our own Dave McCann, who's in the studio, which we look at Dave a lot of times in the studio and we go, can we get just like all of the positive thoughts about what's going on with BYU football? And I feel like even in some of the most positive people, there's not a lot of positivity right now for the Cougars.
Well, first of all, it's always great to be in
your midst.
Thanks
for coming in. Yes, thanks for coming in, Dave.
Welcome back from South Florida or sunny Florida, and I don't know what the weather was like over.
It was actually nice.
Was it decent?
Yeah, it was very nice.
Scott made it out to one of the farmers markets. That's kind of like his vibe that he had over the weekend.
Is that what happened?
Yes, he did.
Careful, you can buy anything of those over there in Oregon.
I'm well aware of all of the things you can buy in Oregon.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, shoot.
Exactly how we felt after the
just speechless.
After the loss.
It's funny about college football, and we were talking about the other night afterwards the highs and lows in a season, especially for a team like BYU that as an independent is going to have different kinds of highs and lows and not this constant battle for a league title, and where you can stumble and lose a little bit, and then all of a sudden the other teams did too, and now all of a sudden you have more big games coming up. When Utah lost to USC, things were looking bleak. Now, after a couple of losses and Washington slipped a couple of times, now it's like, well, now we can beat them. Now, all of a sudden, everything's back. But for BYU, after the USC game, the response has been similar to that in that after the USC game, everything was great. Extend the coach. We're crazy that we're not extending the coach. After the South Florida game, everything's bad. No way you can extend the coach.
Well, or
same,
get him out of here right now.
Same kind of energy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the energy was legit after the USC game. I don't know if the energy is legit coming out of this one. But it's just the flow of fans and
how we go.
And it's
hyperbole both ways, probably, right?
Yeah.
Extend him right now after the USC game.
Okay, I understand all that. I agree with that. Yeah, I really do. But this is South Florida, and I think this is a game that everyone felt it wouldn't – like the major shock for everyone would be you lose this game.
Right.
And I think that's what's really hard about this. And considering that the highlight of the season, because I wanted to ask you about that, is being bowl eligible, right? I mean, isn't that where
– Sure.
So if you're a player, you're going through the season going, okay, my motivation is I want to get bowl eligible. Or I guess I just want to win as many games as I possibly can. I just think it would be harder to get motivated as a player where that was your only motivation. But I think it's hard. I think it's hard as a fan when you go, this is a game that like would get us bowl eligible, because you got Utah State, you have Boise State, and San Diego State isn't going to be.
There are a lot of folks that look at these next two games as losses too, because of what has happened last two games.
With that, and why wouldn't they?
And a 2-6 feel. I mean, I was just saying that after the game, it felt so much like the same Kalani answers from 2017, where it was just the depths of, I don't have all the answers. I don't know where it went wrong. I don't know why we lost this game. I got to go back and look at the film, but I am responsible. And remember, those are the same sentiments you heard after a lot of these games when they were 1-7 in 2017.
And Elisa Tuiaki came out today and said, you know, that defense was on me. We failed as coaches because we didn't adjust. Exactly. And you should have adjusted at halftime, not on Tuesday, you know, or Monday night. That's got to happen in game. And that's on the staff. There's no question about it. That is on the staff. The kids are just out trying their best.
Doing the scheme.
If they're not in position, it's up to the staff to get them in position. And they worked on it all week, you would think. And so I think the failure of South Florida and Toledo is more on the staff. And they owned up to that. They certainly all talked about it today. And the tough thing is, a lot of people thought BYU would go 0-4 to start. I didn't think they'd go 0-4 to start, but a lot of people did, and around the country. But then they would win these next two games and be 2-4. Nobody thought BYU would be 2-4, and two of the losses were to Toledo and South Florida.
Right.
That's just insane. Bowling Green beat Toledo. I mean, just to make the low of lows on Saturday. So here's BYU totally underachieving. The worst part of this problem, I think, as a viewer, is the offensive line, which coming into the season was the strength, at least the alleged strength of the team. That's where the experience was. That's where the continuity was. That's where the size was.
6 sacks and 13 tackles.
13 tackles for loss. They should be embarrassed. First, they should, if they didn't already, they should apologize for Jaren Hall getting his concussion, because two guys come in clean.
Untouched.
And he didn't get his concussion while he's out running for 88 yards. He got it in the pocket throwing a pass. Then they should apologize to Baylor Romney for about having his head taken off. With the game on the line, he's at the 13-yard line, and two guys come in clean and take him out with a shot to the back. Then they should go to Zach Wilson and promise that when he comes back, they'll protect him, because they are failing to protect the quarterback. And if they don't protect Baylor Romney on Saturday night, we'll have Joe Critchlow back in there, and then somebody after him, because you can't sustain shots in the pocket over and over again by guys coming in untouched.
Did you see my Joe Critchlow might go in the game face?
That's on the coach and the player.
That's what I want to ask. Is the problem with BYU football right now because of the offensive line? Is that the problem?
I think that's a huge problem to why they can't run the football and they can't protect the quarterback. That offensive line, which was the strength coming in, or believed to be, and at midway through the season, you know, you give them an F. You give them an A for effort and an F for doing the job.
Is that injuries? Is it just lack of production?
They really have been banged up till this last game where they lost a couple of guys. It's the great mystery. It's like, wait a second. How can we protect our quarterback against Tennessee and USC and Utah for the most part, but we can't protect them against Toledo and South Florida? They are digressing instead of progressing, and that's the red flag. And I think that's where fans just go, well, the wheels must be off, because we're getting worse against lesser opponents.
Dave McCann, KSL5 Television, here in the studio. Last question here, Dave, in the last 60 seconds.
Yes, they can win Saturday. That's as schizophrenic as this team is. They could come back and beat Boise State. They've got their own quarterback issues.
And that just drive you bananas.
And then you just
happens.
Go, and then we're in 2 weeks, we're going to the what-ifs. But hey, look. If they want, they've got to fight to keep
everybody
the coach.
It.
They've got to, these are the players, they've got to fight to keep their jobs. They've got to
bowl
man
eligibility,
up,
all
man
those
up
things.
And do your thing. Now you're playing a team that is superior instead of less than. And they need to prepare for this game like they're preparing for USC.
Maybe they just need a really hard challenge. It's like we
they're going to get it. They got one
coming, and the weather's going to be lousy.
And the week after.
Me in school, it's like I did really good in classes.
I'll be honest, though. I did like Baylor Romney's arm coming in on that situation.
I was shocked. All right, we're taking the break. Dave, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
A little bit. See? And now look.
Good luck sorting this out.
It's not just Scott with the silver linings. No, Dave brought it in with some. I love the hard truths, though, too. That's good. Taking the break here. When we come back, more to go after news, traffic, and weather. We'll be right back here in studio.
We're sending you out with the Smiths?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah,
well
done. It's a Smith remix. We love Morrissey in here. All right. Stay tuned. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL's Unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us on a Monday. These are big Mondays for us after we get off of these road trips. Scott in Corvallis over the weekend. I was in Tampa. Very different results. We're going to talk about the Utes in just a moment here. Jamal Williams, by the way, 82 yards rushing on 8 carries and a touchdown already.
He looks
already.
Good.
He's got, looking really good. Yeah. Part of it is nice that Aaron Jones dropped the pass, fumbled. And that'll put Jamal getting a lot of those carries, but it's just so good to see him back with the back from the injury.
You wondered if he'd be out for a long time after that hit. Oh, my goodness.
So it's good to see Jamal back, and he's
and playing
effective.
Well.
Yeah,
not just
and they were getting shut out. It was 13-0. They were losing to the Detroit Lions, and then now it's 13-10, so they're kind of coming back into this one. Jeremiah Jensen, KSL 5 Television, Sports Beat, KSLSports.com. You can find him in all those places. He's here in studio with us right now, though. How do you fix BYU's problem? I mean, it's pretty. Everybody has all.
How long do we have?
Everybody had all the answers over the weekend. I went on the Twitter, and so everybody had all the answers.
We're talking about on the field, or are we talking big picture football program?
Oh, okay. That's the way it's
the
supposed
question
to be, right?
is, you're not supposed to lose to Toledo. You're not supposed to lose to South Florida.
No.
This is an average team at best every year. I mean, so how do you feel like if you're a BYU fan – that this is headed in a direction that's more what BYU fans are used to. 10 wins, the Lavelle Edwards era. But that's what people want. They want that back.
How about 8 wins?
They do want that. That's why there's a 65,000 seat stadium in Provo. That's why there's all those trophies down at Legacy Hall. Guess what? Those days are over. This program and these fans have to move on and forge a new legacy, a new identity, because those days aren't coming back. College football is different now. Notice how different things have been since realignment. How different things have been for BYU. Realignment was a big shift in college football.
For money,
everything
for
changed.
Talent, all of it. Yeah.
So the haves and the have-nots, the gap grew, right? Well, BYU's one of the have-nots. So BYU's administration, not just the coach, BYU, all the people that make decisions at the university that impact the athletic program, have to decide if they want to be a have or a have-not. Right now, they're a have-not.
Right.
And you can't expect have results when you're a have-not.
But the other
thing is, you can't
expect
Power 5 results when you're not.
So is it that they made the decision to go independent? Is that what made them a have-not? Because I think they made that decision thinking they would be a have.
If they didn't make the decision to be independent, they would be a really have-not.
You think so?
Yes.
You don't think
they're getting $5 or $6 million from ESPN, the TV deal that they wouldn't be getting if they were still in the Mountain West. They are behind the eight ball right now with the ESPN contract. Mm.
So you think it's money then? They have to be in a position. I mean, are they have not because they don't have money, or they have not?
They don't have money. They don't have enough talent. And they're not paying coaches enough money to have the coaching that you need to win at that level.
But how is Boise State then? How are they a have? I mean, they're ranked. They're not considered a have.
Because Boise State doesn't have so many restrictions on the kind of players they can bring into their program.
Boise, Idaho. It's Boise State. It's not.
They can bring in anybody they want. They don't have any.
No, they blue turf. It's a restriction. Okay.
They can bring in a guy with a 13 ACT.
Yeah.
If he can run a 4.440, he's coming to Boise. Guess what? You can't do that at BYU.
You know what? You actually can. You can.
How?
Because I'll tell you how. And I said this in the earlier part of the show. When Stanford decided they were going to be good at football, and they realized that it was extremely valuable to their whole overall image.
Yes.
They can make ways for things to happen.
BYU's not willing to do that now.
I'm not saying I'm with
That's
you.
That's the problem.
Right.
Scott has all the answers. All you got to do is, okay, you ready for this? Let everybody
in. I agree
in.
With you on this,
no,
though. Stanford,
let everybody in.
Stanford
no.
is a great model. Go ahead. Sorry.
Let them go to the honor code. Get rid of the honor code.
No. You don't have to do that. It has nothing to do with the honor code.
You don't have to get rid of the honor code.
No, you don't.
It has been so hard to get into BYU academically.
Right.
Now, Notre Dame, there have been stretches where Notre Dame's been terrible at football. Mm-hmm. And it's when they said, we're going to be a religious institution. We're going to be an institution of higher learning. Football does not matter. And they realized that football actually matters. And the psychological benefit and the perception of your program is so different when your football program does well. It's just the way it is.
Let me ask.
So
this
they
real
said
quick.
We are going to make sure football's good, and now and Notre Dame's way overrated, believe me. But they've made the commitment to be good at football.
Okay, let me ask you this real quick, because I know that the whole weekend it was fire Kalani, which yeah. I hate that kind of stuff. Because that it just sounds like an easy one to just be like, well, just fire.
Problem then, solved, right?
And yeah, and then and everybody says they've got the answer, just fire the coach. Would that solve things for BYU?
No.
At the end of this season?
No.
Where does it get solved?
At the higher level, the administrative level. They have to make a decision how much they want to invest in this sport. They have to make a decision, again, if they want to be a have or have not.
Is Tom Holmo the guy?
It goes higher than Tom. Mm-hmm. It goes higher than Tom.
And I think people want to have – I think the higher up people want to have a good football program at BYU. I really do. Yeah. I don't think they don't.
But what are the – what's willing to – what's everyone willing to do in order to get there?
Yeah. See, I think you have to look at all of it. And you have,
yes.
You have to look at all of it and see how it works.
Real quick before we get out, because I promised we'd bring up some Utah.
We're done?
Hey, how about the Utes though, right? I mean, going from BYU, you couldn't be a more stark difference in terms of – progression versus not progressing, and the Utes have turned a real corner.
For everyone that follows Utah, you know they don't blow teams out. So I've been waiting for this team this year to just go and crush another team's soul. They did that on Saturday. That could have been a lot worse than it was.
Yeah.
Oregon State has improved.
They have some players.
They do have some players.
Oregon State might have
those players
that they
weren't good
better.
On Saturday because Utah shut them down. Look, I think it's interesting. Utah's kind of under the radar again now, right? This is where they're comfortable again.
Yep.
The doubt after the USC loss. You know what? That USC loss woke them up.
Yeah.
That USC loss is now an embarrassment to them. And every week, every time they go in a weight room, every time they go out on the field, I don't want that to happen again.
Go ahead, Scott. And you hear it from the players interviewing them.
Go ahead, Scott. Take
credit. I said it should have been the BYU game at the beginning of the year.
Well, it wasn't. But it's a good thing if something happened.
Right.
To fire them up.
Here's the irony about Utah. The thing that's really bad is their special teams. It's not very good.
That's crazy.
So here's a team that's doing very well offensively, very well defensively. Special teams, scary. It's sketchy.
You don't need special teams
when you're in 52-7.
Hey, look at that.
You're right.
that sounds like an SEC coach. You don't need no special teams to win 52-7.
Alabama, we didn't even have a kicker on scholarship. We don't even need them. We got SEC speed.
Oh, my goodness.
Roll Tide.
I love this stuff. See, and Scott was like, I told you guys about it. Jalen Johnson got embarrassed at USC, and now
not this weekend.
He played an amazing couple of games.
He's an NFL guy.
JJ, what's going on tonight on SportsBeat?
A lot. So BYU players, and Kalani even had some very interesting things to say about their troubles. You can hear that at 10. We'll also hear from the Utes. Big game against Arizona State in the Jazz preseason game. Donovan Mitchell's playing well tonight. I'll show you how he's doing.
See, this is what's good about the weekend. We don't even get to have Scott get all grumpy about preseason NBA basketball and the Jazz.
You don't have to talk about
tell
it.
Him. Don't
Got
tell
enough.
Him they're even playing. All right. JJ, thanks, man. We appreciate it. Joining us right now in studio, Mike Wilson in the Hour Services, Electrical Plumbing, Heating, and Air. Mike, thanks for hanging out with us, first of all, this hour.
It's been fun.
You've had to endure our yelling matches in here. We mean the best, and we're very – But you see it in the breaks, too. We're very passionate about this stuff.
It's good times.
But your expertise is, of course, everybody's turning on those furnaces this time of year. And you would think maybe it would come back again. We're going to get that heat, you know, come back again. But this weekend is going to be just as cold. And so if you haven't serviced that furnace, you're going to get that slushy, the snow and the rain's coming down. It's going to get even colder. This is a time to service that furnace.
Absolutely. You know, and a lot of people say, you know, how do I know if my furnace needs to be tuned up? And here's the thing. The older your system gets, the more important the maintenance is. So if it's 7, 8 years old, you need to get your system serviced. If it's been a couple years, maybe you've skipped one, maybe you forgot about it, maybe you didn't realize you needed to do it, you should make sure that you're having that thing serviced. If it was acting up last winter, there were a lot of people at the end of the last winter that were crossing their fingers saying, come on summer, so I don't have to use my furnace. Well, guess what? Winter's back, and the same issues you were having, you're going to keep having. A tune-up is going to benefit your system.
So when's the best time to do it?
manufacturers don't specify whether you should do it at the beginning, middle, or end of the season. What I've learned from talking to people is the biggest reason they don't do it is because they forget about it.
Yeah,
and so
right
now, while you're thinking about it and while you can save $70, I think this is the best time to get on the schedule to do it.
So save $70 right now. A 29-point preseason furnace tune-up. It's normally $99. $29 you guys are doing. Let's hear the phone call here, their phone number.
801-443-7400.
And it's before 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, you all got 12 minutes.
I know. You
got
to get on this thing and call.
Oh, here's the thing. During a break, I actually was checking the calls coming in. We're actually going to keep the lines open. If you're trying to get through, keep calling. We'll keep them open until everyone that wants to get this deal gets it.
So get the deal tonight. 801-443-7400. The $99 value on the 29-point preseason furnace tune-up. $29. So don't worry about the furnace tune-up, you know, for this season. You get it for $29 from Any Hour Services. Give them a call. 801-443-7400. Mike, thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
Thank you.
Well, we solved all the world's problems here in the last few minutes.
Actually, a lot of good information, I think. Oh, you rolled your eyes.
I rolled my eyes a little bit just because, not because of you, Scott. No, not because of you. No, just because I think everybody has, I don't know, we talk about this every week. We talk about this stuff constantly. We know these teams well. We follow these teams. We know who they are. And I have no answer for you. And when your answer is, you just got it from the top down, just change everything. Well, you know, it's very nebulous and it's
No, it's not nebulous. It's I think you have to look at all the aspects of what it means to run a football program.
So make it easier to get into BYU.
No, just look at admissions. Like where's a barrier? Where's a barrier that we can either reduce or maybe eliminate some of it? And maybe there's, what if it's one or two players a year and what kind of impact that has? But it's kind of who are those one or two players? And then you have to look at the honor code. And I'm not asking BYU to change the honor code, but I think you need to look at it and see what kind of impact it has. And then it's recruiting and like, how are you recruiting and who are you recruiting and what's the message? You know, what are you saying in recruiting and looking at the coaching staff, and are we getting the coaching staff? And I don't know the answer. I'm not here to criticize the coaches here, but are you getting the very best possible coaches you could get? Because I think Lavelle had really good coaches when he was here. And there have been good coaches at BYU. So I think you have to just look at all of it and say, where are we? And then the other thing is, you really have to look at this independence thing and get an honest evaluation of what value. Because, yeah, I understand you're getting more money, but what are you losing in, you know, as JJ left here, and it was a great comment, he said, there's no identity with BYU football right now. There was an identity when Bronco was here. There was an identity when Lavelle was here. Like it or not, there was this identity, and there's no flag, there's no banner for which anyone can look to go, yeah, this is who we are. And that's what I was saying at the beginning of the show, Alex. What's your motivation to play? If you're a BYU player, what do I play for? Bowl eligibility? My pride? It's hard when you're not competing.
Boy, I'm coming today and I'm like, what? Maybe the pass protection gets better. Maybe the run blocking gets better. You're like, change the top down needs to, the identity needs to be changed.
You have to look at it. This isn't a Kalani Sitake. This is not just a Kalani Sitake issue. It's not.
And I agree. And I think that, you know, obviously trying to get, you know, one of the big problems just from the very, from this Saturday, what needed to change was BYU got close to the end zone and didn't end up actually getting touchdowns on some of those occasions.
I look forward to us scoring more points. We're not scoring enough points to get the wins that we need. And we're getting on into the red zone, but we're not punching it in.
I mean, it was frustrating to watch them. It was easy going, too, on the run sometimes. And they're just taking up chunk yardage. And here's something that is crazy, too, is Kalani talking about what really happened in this game. I mean, he said, looked across the field. I mean, they straight up got out coached.
Do a better job coaching. It's me. I've got to do a better job coaching, you know. So that's what I look forward to getting done. Yeah, there's huge urgency for that to happen.
This sounds, you know what I'm feeling? Telling you, I'm when telling I hear you, it's this like Jeremy pulled. Yeah. It's like Jeremy pulled sound from 2017. It's the exact tone, and I'm telling you, It feels way too much deja vu to feel
can,
like.
Can I tell you what it makes me feel like?
What?
It makes me feel like the person that goes, gosh, I'm so stupid. I keep doing that over and over again. And it's not an own up to comment. It's a like, I really want you to go, no, it's okay. It's not your fault.
Right.
You can't just blame yourself. It's someone who's looking for some validation, someone who's looking to be loved. It might sound funny, but it's not like, because shouldn't you know that before you go in the game? Shouldn't you? Why does it take not like, okay, I understand you lose to Toledo. Toledo's a decent team, but to do it 2 weeks in a row, it's like how many times does it take for you to lose before you figure all of this out?
Right.
I mean, I don't understand that comment.
And melting down because it was, you know, 27 points to zero BYU points in the fourth quarter in these last two opponents. All right, it's the MVPs. We got to jump right in here.
The unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player.
According to Alex.
Uh-huh. According to Scott. Most valuable player.
Another scary hit in a football game here on Monday Night Football. One of the DBs getting called for a late hit and a hit on a defensive player of the Packers. Goes down hard, and they have to stop the game for quite a bit, you know, and try to figure this thing out. And hopefully he's okay, but it wasn't. But Jamal Williams is back playing again. Anyway, MVP for tonight, Scott. You want to go first on your?
I'll go first. So my MVP is Jaden Milaro, who is an 8-year-old from the Port Hacking Game Fishing Club in Sydney, Australia.
That's cool.
And the reason he's my MVP is because he caught. He's eight. He's 8 years old, Alex.
Yeah, yeah.
The kid caught a 692-pound tiger shark. And he's six. Or he's eight.
Call me when it's 700. What'd you say, 692?
Yeah, he's just shy of 700. World record for someone of his age.
That's awesome.
But here's the thing. I just love fishing. And
I know.
So,
and that speaks to you, man.
I love when young people get into fishing and enjoy it. And this fish is like eight times his own.
Well, here's the thing.
Because
I have an 8-year-old. If my 8-year-old went out and caught a 700-pound shark, I'd think he'd be all in on fishing too.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's it. Let your kids go out and catch a 700-pound shark.
He kind of looks like your son too.
Does he? All right.
I think if your son caught like a 2-pound fish from Strawberry,
he'd be okay.
He'd be pumped up.
All right. And finally, my MVP is, Pope Francis. Throwing a tweet out. It says this over the weekend. Today we give thanks to the Lord for our new hashtag saints. They walked by faith and now we invoke their intercession. When he hashtag saints, up popped the Saints NFL logo, which everybody took as a big blessing on the New Orleans Saints. And it helped them get the W over the weekend. Scott, MVP the Pope this weekend.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Monday Night Football just got a little bit more interesting. The Green Bay Packers and the Lions tied up at 13. An NFC North division battle. Scott's played in this game a handful of times. The Detroit Lions end up getting the ball back.
The Lions don't know how to recover fumbles.
Boy, I tell you. So they just the punt just got muffed. Wasn't good. And, so Green Bay, who was storming back, they have 13 unanswered points, just gave the ball right back to Matthew Stafford. We're kicking the show off this second hour here, as we always like to do, with the 805 Cut. Let's jump right in. It's time to talk to Utah Utes.
The Cut at 805. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
The majority of Scott's career, and probably the best part of Scott's career in terms of yardage, touchdowns, all that, played in Detroit.
Detroit.
And then Scott, as soon as something happens on TV, boy, Detroit's terrible. I'm like, how can you watch this? I just think about, like, I guess loyalty to teams you played for in the NFL, it's different because you played for a handful of them and I don't know, but Detroit feels different. I feel like you should be a little bit more loyal to these guys, Scott. I think.
Eh. The thing about it for me and the thing about it for me in the NFL though,
what
is, I just like to watch good football, even in college. So if the Detroit Lions are good, fine, I'll watch them. If they're not, I'll watch the Green Bay Packers. I don't really care. I want to watch good quarterbacks play football. I don't care what level it is, but that's what I want to watch.
Two pretty good ones in this game, though. Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford's still that guy that they're looking to have him take them to the playoffs for the first time since Scott Mitchell was there. So good luck with that. In the meantime, we were talking about the Utah Utes. Scott, the Utes win 52-7 over Oregon State. They turn a corner again. I mean, the whole thing was how do you get better from going to that second half against Washington State? Then you have to go into a bye. You kind of take a break there. And they came out and they played even better than they did against Washington State this time on the road.
Yeah, what was interesting is at halftime, the Utah was up 35-0. And I was like, and of course we watched the Oregon game the night before, and they really put it on Colorado, and they made a statement about where they are in the conference.
And it was probably their best game of the year because they actually got their offense going. I saw 45-3, I went, oh, Oregon figured something out.
And so then you have a 35-0 at halftime, and I remember saying to Bill Riley, I said, you know what, it would just be really nice if for once Utah could just score 50 points.
Yeah.
Just like some of these schools, you know, in the SEC and like Oregon the other night. And lo and behold, you know, the final score is 52-7. And the 7 points came after a fumble really late in the game. I mean, Utah really put it on.
With the backups in.
Yeah, really, really put it on Oregon. And they played so well. And so there were a lot of great takeaways from the game. But the thing that I took away from that more than anything was this was a statement game from Utah. In the past, they would kind of fumble their way through the second half. It would look ugly. They just wouldn't continue to kind of stay focused and take care of business. And this is a team that's really – they've really kind of been humbled, and they've been refocused, and they these last two games have just been exceptional across the board on offense and defense. And that's the thing. You think one
– So Utah's one side breakout of the, game this year, you're going to look at the schedule and go, what a breakout game against the Oregon State Beavers.
Yes. Yeah, you probably are.
I get it because you go,
you're just seeing things, Alex. You're seeing things I haven't seen.
What's the thing that surprised you the most?
Throwing a seam to a tight end, taking a shot to the end zone from about the 20-yard line. And I've said it forever. It's so much easier when you get in the red zone to score touchdowns further out, but you got to throw. You got to be aggressive and throw to the end zone. And that happened. And you see so many guys getting involved in the offense, aside from we're going to run zone read on first down, we're going to run zone read on second down. And this team has tremendous depth. But it's the unraveling of the offense in a good way. Like, there's just these wrinkles that keep showing up. And then there's also the defense, which was crazy what they did this week.
Jalen Johnson, speaking of that defense, this is a guy who, I said it earlier, I mean, that's a guy who got embarrassed that you were like, I couldn't believe what we saw out of this guy.
He couldn't stand up on his own 2 feet.
Against USC, this is a guy who is supposed to be a bar none first team all Pac-12 defender, and he got embarrassed by USC, and he said he was embarrassed. He said it was not good. And he was just so excited about how they came out against Oregon State.
Honestly, we just prepared the right way all week. We watched film. I mean, we had a long bye week. So, I mean, just with that and just watching film and really studying and having good practices, I mean, we just put it all together tonight.
Put it all together. That's the key, right? Because it wasn't just – because like you said, a lot of times a game like this against Oregon State, the 52-7 came against the Oregon State teams that were way worse than this team. This is a team with a really good wide receiver – like a talent, an NFL quality guy.
No, he's a legitimate talent, no question.
And then two good backs. One of them's injured, but they have good running backs. They have solid running backs who are tough. I always think of like the Rodgers brothers, you know, Jaquizz and his brother, who were like so hard to get a hold of. And that's what these backs feel like at Oregon State.
Well, and the quarterback is
and their quarterback
well,
Luton
is playing pretty well.
And he throws his first pick of the year. It's a pick six. Utah is, as Scott rolled out for me today, the only FBS team, or is it Power 5 team?
Power 5.
Only Power 5 team in all of college football that has not thrown an interception this year. That is crazy to me. That is so crazy.
So kind of getting back to my point about even on defense, And you hear the BYU coaches talk about, well, we got to make adjustments. Well, we got to make adjustments at halftime. We got to make. You're watching Utah make adjustments in between series, and there's a willingness to, you know, they go, okay, because normally Utah plays one corner on one side and the other corner on the other side of the field. They don't flip flop. And Jalen Johnson, they have a star coverage, and so Jalen Johnson basically followed the very best receiver from Oregon State wherever he went. He was on him the whole game. And you see adjustments to certain things that happen, and they happen within series, and it's on both sides of the ball. So not only is it players, but it's also coaching, and the coaching has been just exceptional this year. I mean, the coordinators, Morgan Scali and Andy Ludwig, it's been really impressive to watch, but the players have also done it and executed on the field. And on top of that, Utah's not tired. Like, they haven't run a lot of plays.
They're scoring pretty quick. They have big plays. Like, think about the big plays that have happened this year for this team. And the 91-yard touchdown the other day. I mean, these chunk plays are a coach's dream, because it's like, get that play over with and get us a score and get us off the field.
I think chunk plays in the first half alone offensively were, I think they had 9.
Man.
In the first half.
So like those 20-plus yards.
Yes.
Yeah,
and it's just, it really helps. It helps as you get into the season, you're just not beat up.
Let's talk about the schedule real quick. ASU this weekend.
The loser's out.
That's what it is.
If you lose this game, you have no shot at the Pac-12 championship.
Both 2-1 in conference. Both 5-1 overall. The Utes are 13th, Arizona State 17th. That's an overrated 17th.
Here's kind of what it is. I think Washington State was a little inflated. I don't think they were as good as that. I just don't think they.
Show that this weekend again, yeah.
Right. And then I think Oregon State, they were better, but they weren't really a good team. And I think Arizona, I don't think Arizona is a great team. I think they're a good team, but they're not. They certainly aren't as good as Utah. They just aren't. They have pieces. Eno Benjamin,
this freshman quarterback, he has no experience, and yet he's 111 for 176 on his passing completions and attempts. He's got 300 more yards than Tyler Huntley does. He's got 8 touchdowns and only 1 pick on the year. So for the guy
he's played well.
No experience. Everyone's like, he's got no experience.
Again, they haven't really played teams that are that, like Michigan State's not that good. Washington State almost beat them. Colorado did beat them. You know, I'm not sure how good Colorado is. And with a freshman quarterback, you're going to get those ups and downs and highs and lows. It will be really interesting to see how well Arizona State and this freshman quarterback play when they come to Salt Lake this week.
Taking a break here.
If the weather's crappy.
It will be. Yeah. Taking the break. Guess what? When we come back, more talk about the Utes. Specifically, a little history lesson. The professor is in, Scott Mitchell, and I feel like it's a little bit of cheating. When we're talking about the history of the Utes, we're talking about how to rank the quarterbacks, the best quarterbacks. Tyler Huntley has now entered the discussion. So Scott has to start putting himself where he really thinks that he is among these other quarterbacks in Utah. All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell. Former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell, his former team, the Detroit Lions, up 16-13 right now over Green Bay. Lots of guys. Look, Kyler Fackrell, Utah State guy. Killebrew on the other side for Detroit, also Utah State guy. Jamal Williams has had a touchdown tonight in this game for being a former BYU guy. And, locals in the NFL. Locals in this game.
In this game, yeah.
So, Scott, we were just before we got out, we were talking about this amazing game that Utah had. You're just heaping praise on this amazing Utah win over Oregon State.
It was impressive.
Now the schedule looks like this: you got Arizona State this weekend. If you're Utah, you got Arizona State this weekend
at home.
Bad weather. Does that benefit the Utes? It did certainly against Washington State.
I think so. I think
it's going to be cold too. It's going to be that slushy.
You hope being in Arizona that they're used to that warm weather.
What a stretch these next three games, and these are the proven.
This is the conference right here.
Right here, Arizona State at Cal.
No, it's home against.
Home against Cal. So home against Arizona State, home against Cal, and then at UW. Yep. That Husky game and that three game stretch and going up to Seattle. Boy, I just look at where the trip ups could happen. UCLA at home. I mean, it's funny and all, but
UCLA is really, really bad.
Really bad.
They're really bad.
So bad. At Arizona, got to go down to Tucson, and that's a team that got blown up by UW over the weekend. And then you finish the season out. The question mark is Colorado too. I mean, like
they're not that good either.
I know, but you know how they are in that game. Scott, it's a rivalry game.
Here's
the Rocky Mountain Oyster Cup.
I'm just telling you, Utah's better than all the remaining teams on their schedule, and they're going to have to play really good against Washington.
Yep.
They did. I mean, Washington's a
good team.
And
then they'll end up having to play Oregon in the Pac-12 championship.
That's probably what will happen, which is a good team.
Where is the Pac-12 championship? Is it still in Santa Clara?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just wondering where I need to book my hotel room for when we go out and do all the coverage, all that stuff.
I think it should happen.
All right. Taking a look here. All right. So on this next portion of the program is brought to you by Scott's Ego. that's not true. We put it on the rundown, but we have to make
just
Scott
like to
talk
get
about
in the,
it.
And, yeah, whatever.
The A whatever comes in. Scott and the Utah QB comparison. The story is up right now at KSLSports.com, and it's about whether or not where is Tyler Huntley right now, what he could be in the overall career impact as a quarterback for the University of Utah. I think it all has to do with where he's going to end up in terms of at the end of this year, if he ends up taking the Utes to another Pac-12 championship game, and if they win that Pac-12 championship game, go to the Rose Bowl or a college football playoff, maybe. It is just a crazy thing to think about where he would be in the – I would have never have thought that Tyler Huntley would be in that conversation of one of the greats of all time, but he is on pace to have a better career
than any of them.
Than Alex Smith, than Brian Johnson. And, well, he won't break Scott Mitchell's records, but maybe in terms of impact, you know, you win those big games, you get a lot of extra points. You know, like that's the kind of thing. I mean, Brian Johnson's way up on the list because his ability to win. The games. I mean, they
won the Sugar Bowl. I mean,
and the comparison is they're going undefeated. They're number two at the end of the season.
Yeah.
They go through this list. You go through this list of quarterbacks. Tyler Huntley's got 9 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. And in his senior year, Brian Johnson had 10 touchdowns and 6 picks at this point.
Right.
And a lot fewer yards. And was not really, you didn't look at him and go, man, that guy's just he's a world beater. You thought to yourself, oh, man, he gets in games and he knows how to kind of gut out a win.
What's impressive about Tyler Huntley is his ability, one, to throw the football, and he throws it well. I mean, he's really been on target. He hasn't even forced passes this year. He hasn't even made kind of sketchy decisions about where to throw the football. But then it's his ability to run and actually extend plays. And he has an uncanny ability as he's running to make some throws that you just go, wow, that's just exceptional. And I've seen it, you know, for the last 2 years. The challenge for Tyler Huntley a year ago was just being healthy and staying healthy. I think it would have impacted last year. I really do. I think it would have had an impact. And so this year he's been as good as anyone in the country.
Here's Coach Kyle Whittingham talking about those comparisons between Alex Smith and Tyler Huntley.
Think back to Alex. It was a long time ago, but when he was here, same type of work ethic and the same type of preparation that went into his game week. Tyler's doing a lot of the same stuff.
What does that mean? He's doing a lot of the same stuff in terms of prepping for the – I mean, when you say, oh, yeah, his game preparation, that's Coach Whit not giving an answer,
I mean,
right? Like, isn't that what that feels like?
I don't understand – where, because you don't have a choice, you know. I guess it's like you go in and you watch game film, or you—I don't know—the way
it's your
the
job.
Way
you, that's what you do.
The way you work at practice, you know. I don't. I mean, there's certainly guys that just have an ability to really focus in and just say, okay, you know, I've got to take care of my business, and I understood that there's a routine you have to get into. Each week and there's no shortcut to it. I mean, it's kind of hard. You have to grind through a lot of stuff, and some guys aren't necessarily willing to do it. Or I think with a guy like Tyler and even Alex Smith, they're really talented. And a lot of times in college, you can just get away with being better than people. And when you have guys that'll work at it and study and prepare themselves mentally, then you see excellent football.
Let's talk about that list then. Let's go top three.
Well, the problem with I think if Tyler okay
Tyler Huntley still has a lot of his year to still keep playing, okay. Right?
I mean, if Tyler Huntley continues on this pace, Utah goes to, and let's just say they go to the Rose Bowl, and let's say they win the Rose Bowl, then I think as far as his the production and the success, you have to put him at number one only because of the competition that he's playing. Those were Mountain West teams. The other ones, and this is against better competition.
What about your crazy yardage, though, and your touchdown numbers?
Here's the thing. I'm so irrelevant about – I really am. I mean –
Hold on. Get that drop, Jeremy. I'm just kidding.
If you go to the University of Utah, they don't even talk about the days in the WAC conference.
Right, it started
when the Mountain West back when we were there – I remember thinking of guys who played 30 years ago when I was in college, and it's like, oh, those guys are ancient, you know. And so I'm sure that's the same thing. You know, who knows? I'm pretty confident that if I was put in these offenses in these circumstances, I'd have tremendous success.
So I mean, I look at it and I think about just we look at yardage, we look at numbers. But now, even with the NFL quarterbacks, right? I was watching Philip Rivers yesterday, and he has 57,000 yards. He's got 370 touchdowns in his career, and it's the most by anybody who has never even been to a Super Bowl.
Been to a Super Bowl, yeah.
And I thought,
I look at that and I go, man, my arm would just be tired after all that.
I mean, that's a guy, and people still go, yeah, but has he done enough to go in the Hall of Fame? And you're like, of course he has.
Sure.
Just the 9 kids he had while he's playing football, that's enough to be able to get in the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, almost 60,000 yards. He'll probably eclipse 60,000 yards in his time in the NFL after it's all said and done with almost 400 touchdowns.
Yeah,
and
a guy that has a really weird throwing motion.
That's
This is
where Scott is.
I'm just
all
like,
this
I,
is
I
the
don't
life
even,
Scott lives all the time.
I just don't
yeah,
even.
Look at his throwing motion, though. I'm like, he's a 5-year-old. Come on. Yeah, I know. I could tell he doesn't have it.
That's what he looks like. He looks like a 5-year-old throwing the ball. Like his little shock put sling thing.
Oh,
just,
my goodness.
But it gets there. It works, and it's worked very effective.
Well, okay. So,
but Drew Brees, his
are you number three
so much,
then on this list?
So much better.
Are you number three?
I don't even want to get into this.
Okay. All right. I won't make you.
The
do
problem
that.
Is
if this was like a Friday, I'd make you unpack it. It's fine. We got to take a break
anyway. I don't know. Slip one more notch down the old relevancy barrel.
All right. Taking the break. He turned his mic off. He's so mad about it. We're coming back, got more to go. Hey, we're going to do a new thing this week.
Correct lens. And then there was another.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.